stuff read in my book, and it's sky-opening.
Log Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Tuesday night open call. I'd like to welcome everybody tonight. Just so everybody knows, Jesse is not going to be with us. He has a commitment that he had to be involved in this evening, and he will not be with us, but I think we'll have pretty much the rest of the crew here. We're waiting for everybody to show up. It is summertime, and people have so many different activities that that they're involved in. And sometimes we get a little slow getting the ball rolling here, but I'd like to welcome everybody, and I'm going to go ahead and just do the very basic disclaimer and tell everybody that what you hear on this call is not legal advice. We discuss legal issues, but we don't in any way, shape, or form give any legal advice because we're not attorneys. If you want legal advice, I suggest that you go find a bar-licensed attorney because they are the ones that are allowed to dispense that. And we are not, but we're going to have a lot of fun talking about the legal issues and consumer protection statutes, and we're glad that you're with us tonight. Larry, I got you in tonight. How are you doing?
Good, Dave. How's it going?
Oh, not too bad. We're rounding up everybody here. As soon as we get all the people, all of our moderators in, we'll get things going here. But it's going to be good news time. Anybody that has good news, you're going to want to press 1 on the keyboard of your phone. That's only for good news at this point in time. It's not for questions. It's good news only. Oh, it was an interesting day today. I went and filed another suit against Midland, and I still don't have a check from them. Funny thing about that. But I did send the email to the attorney today, and we'll see if we can find out where that check is. And good evening, Sir John.
Hey, I was wondering if you saw me or not.
I saw you. We're going down the list here, getting everybody in. How are you doing tonight?
Pretty good. Ready for another great call.
Yep. Oh, we have great calls. All I got to do is round up Jeff here, and I'm looking on the board for him, but by golly, there he is. He sneaked in down the line there. Good evening, Jeff.
Well,
wait a minute. There he is. Okay. The board jumped.
Yeah, when you pressed in. 1 so you could find me.
Yeah, well, see how you are. You put yourself up there and you made the board jump, so almost missed you. But
you still taking good news?
We're just getting ready to start into good news. Okay. And I'm assuming that you asking means that you have some.
Well, that information about the FDCPA being a mandatory counterclaim.
Yeah.
And in fact, it is not that information. I went up and looked up the case, and I pulled down the case, took your information, put it up on the What's in the News page on my site.
Okay, good.
Just got it done.
Oh, very good.
That quick.
All right. Well, again, for anybody that has any good news for us tonight, hit the 1 key on the keypad on your phone, and that'll get you in for good news. Jeff, we're getting some noise, I think, from your phone again.
I hope not.
It was kind of clinkling in the back, strange noises. You got a really funky
phone. Those
are
my joints.
You were walking around. Oh, my God. I hope I'm not that way when I get a few years older. All right. Well, let's see if any of our moderators have any good news. We'll hit that first, and then we'll go to the members and see what we got there. Any of our moderators got any good news tonight?
Well, it's not my own good news, but it's something interesting. Jeff sent out a case, Robbins versus Spokio, and Spokio is one of those sites you can look people up on to find name, address, and phone numbers. Anyways, this guy's suing them under the FCRA, and the court held that he actually had standing. And it's quite interesting that, you know, it's something that you wouldn't think of being a credit reporting agency, some online vehicle that provides information about people, phone numbers and addresses and things like that. And the man sued him. He said it made him, it provided harm because it made it sound like he was rich and so he couldn't get a job. It said that he had a graduate degree and was wealthy. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So if you want to sue, there you go. Look yourself up and see what's contained on Spokio.
Yeah, another interesting avenue. Yep, you never know. Okay. Larry, you got anything? You gotten a check lately?
I have not. Does that make me a bad person?
No, I'm just kind of wondering, you know, with all the stuff you had going, we haven't heard you pipe up about a check just recently.
Yeah, well, I filed that lawsuit a couple of weeks ago, and I've been out of town for a few days, so I'll get back into it, don't worry.
Oh, no worries, we know you will. All right, well, as I said, I filed lawsuit number 5 against Midland today, and I did find out that number 4 did get served Monday of last week on the 7th. I talked to the process server today because I hadn't got things back in the mail. So that's moving on, and we are just proceeding on with other matters that we have to deal with as well. I won't go into those at the present time, but it's just an ongoing process like everybody knows. All right, let's go to 321 for good news. See if you got some good news for us tonight. 321, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Pretty good.
This is Brian in Central Florida.
I thought that sounded an awful lot like a Brian.
Yeah, I was going to say hello, gentlemen, because I haven't heard Terry's voice yet tonight. Is she off tonight?
Nah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. I heard you mentioning all the other moderators. I just didn't hear her name mentioned. So, I just signed a settlement agreement yesterday. It was just for one credit pull, but they gave me everything I wanted, so that was nice.
Oh, very good. Hey,
I had to file the suit to get it, but you know they paid for all that too. So,
there you go. Well, you know that's the thing. Sometimes. It's almost like a game of chicken. Well, you know, you threaten to file a lawsuit, but, you know, are you really going to do it? Oh, my God, you did it. Well, I guess we better pay them because they get a lot of threats of lawsuits where people don't follow through. I hope everybody understands that.
I think also the quality of the lawsuit also tends to make a difference, too.
Yeah, I'm sure. If they see something that looks like it's easily defeatable, they might press it a little bit, but...
Or right. Something that one of these guys downloaded off the internet.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I've been hanging around listening to you guys for a little while, so I think mine's it's fairly competent anyways.
I'm glad you brought that up because earlier I was going through a document that we've had for a while and had sent out some time back called Defending Junk Buyer Lawsuits, PDF. And in section 14 on page 12 of that doc, there's a lot of really good stuff in there. But anyway, it brings up something that everybody should probably pay attention to. And I just want to share that with you in regard to settlements. And this document was written for attorneys representing people like us, you know, and it's talking to the attorney. And it says, you want judgment in favor of your client and release of judgment against your client, if applicable. You should also insist on deletion of the trade line with the 3 credit reporting agencies. In the settlement agreement, include language stating that this is the settlement of a disputed debt. if your client did not owe the money as alleged, it should not be portrayed as otherwise. The agreement should also include a statement that no IRS Form 1099 will be issued, which is sent when an undisputed debt is forgiven, possibly resulting in taxable income to your client. So you need to make sure that in your settlement agreements, they recognize that that settlement is in connection with a disputed debt. And that's all you need to insist on. And then if they file a 1099, there's your proof that it's fraudulent. They can't file a 1099 on a disputed debt.
Well, thank you for bringing that to my attention again, Terry. It's been a while since I've read that PDF, but that was one of the arguments I had when I originally got the settlement last week. There was two problems I had. Well, that 1099 doesn't really bother me a whole lot, or the W-9. But what did bother me is they wanted to wait 30 days to pay me.
Yeah.
And I was like, I know you cut checks more than once a month, okay? You probably cut one every day, so.
Right, but that probably explains why a lot of times, even though we tell the attorney on the other side when it comes time for settlement, I'll fill out your W-9, but I'm telling you right now, if your client has the audacity to send me a 1099, I'm going to report it to the IRS as fraudulent. And then they turn around and do it anyway. Why? Because it doesn't say in the settlement agreement that the debt was disputed. It doesn't say that it's statutory damages, you know, and so forth. Right? So you have to file a 3949A and say so on there. But if that's in the settlement agreement, then they can't even file the 1099.
But I had one particular debt collector who wouldn't cut me a check without giving them the W-9.
Well, the W-9 is fine. That's not the issue. The
right.
issue is whether they acknowledge, they don't need to admit guilt, which they never will, in a settlement agreement. All you have to insist on is that they acknowledge in the settlement agreement that these proceeds are in connection with a disputed debt.
Well, then does that work the same way for a credit pull?
A settlement agreement.
Or you're talking about just trade lines?
Well, if you dispute the credit pull, you are inadvertent. You are also disputing the debt. You're disputing their right to pull it, right?
Right.
So a settlement agreement is a settlement agreement. And by forcing them to simply acknowledge that the proceeds of that agreement are in connection with a disputed debt does not say anything about their guilt or not guilt.
Right. Well, that brings up another good point, is that there's quite a few PDFs that I have printed out that I haven't looked at in a while, and I was going back through your FCRA Fatal Flaws, which, of course, you just did the webinar, which was fantastic. But it's just nice to go back and read things that you haven't pulled out of the shelf in a while, pulled off the shelf in a while.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Review.
I think I'll attach this one again tonight on the email going out for tomorrow night's call reminder, because I'm also putting that, what is it called? Dave?
What we were talking about last night?
No, yeah, the guidelines.
I
attached those to tonight's email, so I'll go ahead and attach this too, because I know it's been quite a while since we shared it, and there's probably a lot of new people, and they don't have it. So it's not very long. I think it's only, 13 pages?
Yeah, I don't believe it's real big. Yep.
The other thing I was going to ask you, if you don't mind, one more thing, if you can attach, Terry, you said you had a PDF or a Word that what you used for the 8th edition of what was in your credit report, which showed all the case law on it?
Yeah, the document.
Right, that you sent to Gary to load the slides?
Yeah, I can put that on there.
Thank you.
That would be much appreciated. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All righty. Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
All right. Let's go to 907 for good news. This is good news only yet, everybody, just so you know. 907, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi.
Good evening.
My name is Justin. I'm from here in Alaska. Just wanted to let you guys know that I just got enough money to sign up for the membership.
Oh, wonderful. Because
I sued a bank and ended up getting a settlement for $750. So,
well, great.
Yeah, yeah, I'm pretty excited. And it was using the free stuff, on a credit pool.
Isn't that great where you can get information for free and turn it into money?
Sure is. It sure is.
Well, that's super. Glad to hear it.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much. That's, you know, hey, that is that's good, really good news. All right, let's go to 516. 516, you've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, I know this is good news, but I have a question, so when you guys are ready, just call back on me.
Oh, all right. Yep, we're not in the Q&A yet. Okay.
No problem.
All righty. Let's see. We're going to go to 863. Come on. Blog Talk. There we go. 863 for good news. You've been unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Sorry, I don't have any good news.
All righty. Thank you very much.
And Dave, if they press 1 again, will they put their hand down?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The one key, if you've just been on for good news, to cancel yourself out of the queue, just hit the one key on your phone again, and that will take you down out of it. All right. That's all that we have for good news on there, so I guess we're going to go ahead and proceed on to Q&A tonight. Again, I want to tell everybody that Jesse is not with us tonight. He had another commitment that he had to attend, and he's not going to be with us. Jeff, we've got to be getting a lot of interference off your phone here. We're getting a lot of noise.
That was the rain. Sorry.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back here. I want to double check and make sure. 907. 907, did you have a question for us? Area code 907. Did you have a question for us? Evidently not.
No, I do.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. All right. Let's go to 516 then. We're going to go back to 516. And for everybody that has questions tonight, hit the one key on your phone. That will put you in the queue. Go ahead.
Okay. My question is basically, so I signed up for an online school, and the online school closed down, and the teach out program where I go to this new online school, and in the agreement it said the new school will not charge me any money. So now I got a bill in the mail from a debt collector that purchased the account of $20,000, even though...
Oh, no, wait a minute. Purchased what account? There was an account for the original school, I'm assuming?
No, not the original school, for the new school. The new school charged me $20,000.
Okay. So you had a contract with them for $20,000,
right? But with the old school and the new school, there was an agreement. I have that paper too that said that the new school is not supposed to charge the students. They're supposed to honor the rest of the program and not charge anything extra. So they're charging me $20,000 when there's not supposed to be any chargement. So I think that's why they never sent me an original bill. They went straight to the debt collector, and the debt collector bought it off of the school.
Okay.
So I'm not really too sure what to do about that situation.
All right. Now, you say you are a member?
No, sir. I'm not a member. I'm not
okay.
a member.
But the first thing at least not yet. Yeah, okay. Well, that's going to be your first thing. You're going to want to become a member and get in there and start studying beating credit cards, that area there, to get an idea if they would come after you. But the first thing you want to do is send them a demand for validation. They're saying you owe money. You need to send them a demand for validation. Say, hey, why don't you prove to me that I owe you a nickel?
Right.
But you really need to become a member so that you can learn how to deal with this properly, because what you're going to get on these calls is bits and pieces, and
the
stance that we take in large part is the best defense is a good offense, meaning a federal lawsuit. Because
okay.
in your case, they're trying to collect a non-existent debt.
Right.
And that's a violation of the FDCPA. Now, how long ago did they make the first demand for payment of you?
Like last week. It just came last week. And I called
okay.
the school. I called the school before they sold them the debt. And I was like, what are you guys talking about? I'm not supposed to owe anything. So they're like, oh, the person who deals with that is on vacation right now. She'll give you a call back. So a couple weeks go by and I get this bill.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. So.
Yeah, monkey business. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get in the website. There's a sample validation demand letters in there. And you
okay.
want to go along with that, you want to come on the Monday night calls and the Wednesday night calls. There's lots of resources here, but the very first thing you want to do is get a demand for validation out to these people.
Okay.
Are you still in school?
Pardon?
Yeah.
Are you still in the school?
No, I finished.
Okay. I mean, I personally wouldn't even talk to the school right now. Just let the collection agency set themselves up and dig a hole for themselves. You can go up to the school later for whatever they might have done.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
But you can go out of the school later for what
okay.
they might have done. They sold a non-existent debt. But I just let the debt collector set themselves up and check your credit, too.
Okay.
And when you send out that demand for validation, make sure you send that certified mail.
Okay.
Because you want proof that they got it.
Right.
Okay.
All right, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, also,
pardon?
when you do that, you want to, when you write the letter up and sign it, make sure you keep a copy of it.
Okay.
You're going to need that as evidence to show that you did, in fact, send it to them. If you take them to court, that you have the evidence that, yes, I did make the validation demand on this date. It was within the first 30 days, and here's the proof that they received it from the Postal Service. So those are the bases you want to cover to begin with. But you really need to get in and become a member so you can start studying this stuff and know how to turn the tables on them. And then attend the Monday and Wednesday calls as well. Okay?
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
All righty. You're very welcome. That's, that's not the first time we've heard of that kind of nonsense going on, not by any means. Okay, let's go to 727. This guy's flying a 727 tonight, or she is flying one, either one.
Hi, is that me?
I think it's you.
Okay, hi, this is Mary Jo from Hudson. Hi, everyone.
How are you tonight?
I am good. I'm really tired, so I'm going to try to make sense of my – I wrote down my questions. I've been studying.
Very good.
Thank you. I listened entirely to Terry's teaching on what lies in your credit report, and I am still doing my homework about the Capital One conundrum that I have going on, and I finally pulled out the – the pre-legal notice that Capital One Services sent me and turned it over and read it, like you guys are saying, you know, learn for yourself, so I'm trying to do that. So I turned it over and I read about how they're a subsidiary of Capital One, and it states right on here that they're bill collectors. So I think I'm correct in my assumption that this is a violation because they are not the original creditor. They are a subsidiary of the original creditor. They are a debt collector, and I don't believe they have the authority to send me a pre-legal notice that if you don't pay this, we're going to take legal action against you. So my question is that correct? Am I understanding everything there?
Who wants to take that one?
What is the violation that you're alleging?
That they don't have the authority to threaten me with a legal court case to sue me for this debt, that this is inappropriate because they're not the correct party that could take this action.
Well, are you saying because you don't owe them specifically or because they're a debt collector? I mean,
because they're a debt collector for Capital One, they're not Capital One. They're the subsidiary of Capital One.
Okay. Well, that in itself isn't necessarily a violation. I mean,
okay.
In theory, there could be a debt collector who tries to collect the alleged debt, and they could be doing nothing wrong, in theory. I mean, I've never really seen it happen, and you can always make the case. But you have to be very specific about what they're doing wrong. Just because the debt was transferred from one entity to another, that in itself doesn't make it a violation.
Right, but the question is, it's one of their notices that they send out that says pre-legal notice. It says your account is seriously delinquent and meets the guidelines for potential legal action if payment is not made toward the amount shown. And it says lawsuits can have serious consequences. And then shortly after I got this from Capital One Services LLC, a couple of their attorneys that were farmed out to come after me were quickly quelled when I sent out the debt validation notice. So no one got back to me after I sent them that. So I thought that you guys said, and I did read it, I just couldn't find it in the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act literature that I'm reading here, that I have it printed out, that they can't threaten you with an action that they can't take. So here they're threatening me with taking me to court.
They can take that action.
Okay.
Why couldn't they?
Well, because you guys, I don't know, forget it. I don't know nothing. I can't, because I'm not
No, you. You can. You just have to be very focused on exactly what you're claiming the violation is. Is there any reason they can't file a lawsuit against you tomorrow?
No, I guess not. I don't understand. So.
Well, like, is the debt time barred?
No, it's just that they're a debt collector for Capital One. They're not the original creditor. So I thought only the original creditor can sue you, and not a debt collector that is one of their subsidiaries.
A debt collector can sue you. Does that mean that everything they allege in their suit or the way they file it proves standing and so on and so forth? No. But they can do it.
Okay, well, I'm totally lost, so I think I'll just quit the site and forget about it because I don't understand anything you guys say.
Well, quitting is not going to solve your problem. It's a matter of if you're not fully understanding things, then that's an indication you just need to do some more study and possibly ask some more questions as you do that. And that's why
right.
We have the calls on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday nights. You know, we realize when you first step into this, it's very foreign, and it's not necessarily always real easy to understand at first. Sometimes it takes a little while until you have that aha moment, so to speak. But giving up, that's not going to get you anywhere other than have them breathing down your neck and you not knowing how to deal with it.
Right, and what Larry and I both are trying to convey to you is that perhaps you are not recognizing the correct cause of action. Not that there isn't one, that you're not quite recognizing what your grounds are. Right, Larry?
Correct.
Okay. So it's, I think you can see that there's a consensus among us that have been doing this for a more extended period of time that, you know, it's just a matter of you need to keep working on your education. And that's what we would say.
I've never been contacted by a collection agency where they didn't violate the law, or at the very least give a good indication that they violated it, you know, one that I was perfectly willing to file a lawsuit. You just need to go through the FDCPA and identify any possible violation they may have committed, including the fact that you simply don't owe them a debt.
Yeah.
Right, if I don't owe them the debt and they threatened to take me to court, I thought that was a violation because I listen to the calls, I comb through the papers, I look at this, and I'm like, well, they're not the original creditor, they are a debt collector, but I ask them to validate the debt, they don't validate the debt, and then I ask their attorneys that they stuck on me to validate the debt, nobody gets back to me, so obviously they can't validate the debt.
Well, okay, all right, wait a minute, right there. You asked them to validate it, right? You demanded debt validation.
Yeah.
They didn't validate. Did they continue collection action after that?
Yes, they did. They sent.
All right, there's your violation. There's one of them right there. That's a violation. Not that they didn't validate. That's not a violation.
Right.
But that they continued collection action after they didn't validate.
So when I send them the debt validation notice, and they send another debt collector, or they send me another document in the mail attempting to collect the debt, that's a violation.
Yes.
Okay, I get that. Okay, and then I thought that if someone threatens you with an action that they really don't have standing to take, is that correct? Am I just not applying it properly to this situation? Is that also like if someone can't actually sue you? Because there is, I know, I think Dave was talking about it, I think, a little bit ago about how they can't threaten you with a lawsuit because they can't validate the debt.
No.
I just understand that.
Right. You're misunderstanding that.
Illegal action don't intend to take.
Yeah.
They don't intend to take.
Yeah.
Or,
if they're threatening you with a lawsuit and they're not going to file, that is a violation. Debt collectors sue people all the time.
Right. Right.
So they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's right, but they can do it.
The only the only time they're absolutely not authorized to file a suit against you, and it's definitely not allowed, is if that debt is time barred by your state statute of limitations on the collection of that type of debt.
Yes, that I understand, the statute of limitations, but that unfortunately we were trying to be, you know, good stewards and fix our credit, so we started paying it through one of those credit, you know, repair things, so it re-aged it, which I didn't know, or it would have been off my credit right now, and I would have told them to go pack it, because it's past the statute of limitations for collections. I got...
Never too late to learn.
Yeah, I know, that's why I'm kind of trying to press through this. It's just so frustrating sometimes for me, that's why I'm on the call tonight. And Terry, I wanted to ask you about credit pulls. Now, is any debt collector allowed to look at your credit? Are they just because they're collecting a debt? I thought sometimes when you guys talk about different issues, sometimes the context is different, I suppose, and I get like mixed signals about what's right and what's not right. So the credit pulls, now they sent a couple attorneys, like I said, to come after me for this, and I asked them to validate it, never heard of it. And then when I started to check my credit report, I see these firms on my credit report. Now, are they allowed to do that? Because I didn't think they were, and then I heard that they might be, and it's...
Well, they always do, and they 99% of the time will claim that their justification for doing so is, excuse me, permissible purpose under BA 3A. And when they do that, then you've got them. Because... Now, there's case law that we can cite that doesn't have anything to do with them, and their permissible purpose does not lie in that section of the FCRA. The only way they can have permissible purpose is if it is, in fact, connected with a legitimate business need, and that legitimate business need can only exist if there is it's connected with a transaction, a credit transaction initiated by you. So
exactly.
What's the first thing they have to know? They've got to be able to know or have a damn good reason to believe that there was, in fact, an original transaction initiated by you. And I've yet to see a collector, and especially a buyer, who can make that claim.
See, that's what I thought, because when you read it, and I know Dave on your call a few weeks ago was like, don't believe attorneys, because I had sent them, they sent Ruben and Debeski, or D-E-B-S-K-I, these are the attorneys, one of the attorney firms that they sent after me, and I sent them the notice that's on the site that says, why did you, I'm, you know, asking what, if you had permission to pull my credit, you know, and why did you do that, if you have permission, you know, that letter, to please send me a copy, and I had just gotten that letter, and of course, they're like, you know, you need to stop pursuing this, we had permissible purpose, you know, the whole thing, and all this case law, and I'm thinking, well, isn't that, if you have a transaction with them, or if they, you know, you have a, what you said, I'm sorry, I'm just tired, that I don't have a line of credit with them.
Okay, stop and ask yourself, what would it take to prove to anybody, you or anybody else, that there was an initial credit transaction initiated by you that they have legal title to collect? What would it take to prove that?
Well, they would have to have a validation information, which means it would be contracts.
Okay.
Correct?
That's part of it.
Okay.
They would have to have the contract with your signature on it and be able to substantiate that that's your signature. That's one leg of it. Okay?
Okay,
that might prove that there was a transaction that you initiated, not with them, but with somebody. That's one
mm-hmm.
leg of it. Okay, now what about the other leg of it? The chain of title that proves that the amount, not only that the amount they're trying to collect is 100% accurate, but that they have a legal standing and right to collect on it. The chain of title, where is that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in order to have that, what do they have to have?
So they,
I'm asking
so,
you, do you
okay,
know...
So that,
in order to have that, what do they need to have?
They need to have proof of purchase of the debt, I think, is what you guys talk about.
No.
Okay.
No, that just proves they made a bad investment.
Okay.
No, so I'll answer it, okay? In order to satisfy that leg of it, they would have to have the accounting, the general ledger accounting.
Oh, okay.
Every single charge that was ever made on the account from zero, and a breakdown of what part of it was interest,
mm-hmm.
junk fees, renewal fees, annual fees, late fees, mm-hmm. all of those sorts of things, and to the penny, to equal what it is they claim is the balance, they would have to have all those records, all that paperwork from the beginning of that account to the present. I don't know about anybody else on this call, but I have never and don't expect to ever see a debt collector and especially a buyer who could even think about putting their hands on that, because even the banks don't have it.
Okay, so that's a detailed accounting of the debt that they say that I owe them, which is just, that's what you're saying. Okay.
That's what it would take to establish a reason to believe that there was a credit transaction initiated by you.
Right.
But they never, never have that. So, ipso facto, how can there possibly be a permissible purpose?
Okay. Yeah, so then, and it's funny because the letter that he sent, which I can't find right now, and I'm so mad, it's like they say they just looked at my credit, and then they go to the next paragraph, and he writes that here's all the case law about being able to pull your credit. So the letter contradicts itself. He says they just looked at it. No one else can see that they looked at my credit. But then you cite case law that says you're allowed to pull my credit because you're a debt collector and you're looking to collect the debt. And then all this case law. So which one is it? You pulled it or you just looked at it?
Just the fact that they're a debt collector does not constitute permissible purpose, no matter how you look at it. The
okay,
fact
so
that they are who they are does not give them special rights.
That's what I thought. So that's what I was trying to – that's what I thought in my head. And thank you for explaining that because I'm
well,
like –
that's sort of like President Obama saying, if Congress doesn't do what I want, well, fine then. I'll just sidestep them. I've got an ink pen and a phone. Well, just
right.
because he is who he is does not change the powers inherent to the office. And he doesn't have that power. Just
right,
because he is who he is. It's the
right.
same thing here. Just because
okay.
they are what they are doesn't make them special and give them different rights than yours or different rights than the way it is laid out in the statutes.
Okay, because that's what I
change
had,
it.
Right, that's what I had understood in my mind. I don't know all the words or how to sometimes articulate everything quite ready right yet. But that's what I thought because I'm like, this letter is so threatening, like you need to cease coming after, you know, this is, it's just, you're wrong. In other words, he was trying to tell me, you are wrong, we are right, we're allowed to look at, pull your credit, we're allowed to
oh, they're always
the
going to do
law.
That.
Yeah.
That's the way they act, it's intimidation. They operate
right.
with that.
Get used
right.
to it because it's all they have. And another okay. thing is, they only have a couple of defenses they can pull out of their little magic bag of tricks. And one of those is, one of those is bona fide error. They can try to say, oh, well, it was done in error and we've told the credit reporting agency to remove it. And so that's been taken care of and that should satisfy the problem, okay, to try to unring the bell. That's their one tactic that they can try. The other one is right from the get-go. They know there's no defense, so they've got to make it about the debt, make it about that original so-called account that constitutes their imaginary rights. And if they can get you to fall for that in the beginning, well, they've just gotten rid of a problem. If they don't make you fall for it in the beginning, and then you file the suit, again, they're going to try it again. And they will continue to try it all the way through the lawsuit. Because
okay.
really, that's all they can hope for, is at some point to get you to fall into that trap. And if you do, and it's your bust because it's your lawsuit and you're the plaintiff, and if you fall into that trap and you allow that case and the whole issue to become about the debt, it is not the judge, it is not the court's job to stop you from shooting yourself in the foot.
Exactly.
Right.
So you have
okay.
to stay on point, and the point is that they had no permissible purpose to look at my credit report.
You just focus that everything's about their behavior.
Okay. And now, is there? Can you just guys like maybe teach me a little where to study in the site so I can really get like an understanding?
Go through Terry's webinars.
And not only that, but tonight when you are on my email list, I take it.
Yes.
Okay. Anybody who isn't needs to get on it right after this call, because I'm going to be sending out a study guideline for everyone that one of our wonderful members put a whole lot of work into, that is going to help everybody know how to study and learn through the archived webinars. And I'm sending that out tonight with my call reminder.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it. I'm really, really trying to do this, so I really thank you
okay.
so much for
it,
helping
it
me.
It just, you know, everybody learns at a different rate, and you just keep at it, but giving up just isn't going to get you where you need to go. So don't do that, whatever you do.
Okay, I'm trying.
Okay? Don't let the frustration
like
eat you up.
I know, I feel like
okay.
the light comes on, and then I ask a question, and I'm like, oh, I didn't get it again.
Yeah. Oh, no, the light bulb blew.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. We're going to go to 828. Yeah, we got to keep going. Doggone it. The board jumped there. Come on, try this. All right, 828, you've been unmuted.
Is this me?
You are up to bat. Go for it.
Okay, this is Terry in North Carolina. I was trying to get on Good News because we've got some stuff going on with my foreclosure here in North Carolina.
We'll take Good News.
Yeah, I've got I got my securitization done, and the previous clerk of court was trying to make me homeless before I took his seat.
Right.
Because I'm about to take his seat here in a couple of days.
Good for you. You beat
him.
That is awesome.
Not. Yeah, and what they're trying to do is. We have a securitization audit that we did a couple of days ago, which shows that Chase had absolutely no right to foreclose at all. Okay, we're in 19 of the different sections in the securitization, and 7 of them have been completely paid off. So that it shows that the note has been completely paid off. Securitization is so important to everybody that's in foreclosure. That they needed to know this, and so I'm jumping down their throat so bad because I've got after them over the Fair Debt Collection or the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and they failed to answer under the Uniform Commercial Code. I sent them one of the letters that they sent everybody else under the UCC, and they didn't answer, and it's like their time ran out. And once their time ran out, once their 30 days ran out, they're just like us. You know, now Chase owes me that amount.
Well,
and so,
we're not going to get into that. But
yeah, it's hard to collect. But, you know, I got my securitization in today a couple of days ago, and it shows that it was like in 17 or it was in 21 different classes that wasn't
21
applied.
Tranches.
Oh, it's awful. It's awful. We got glass key violations. I mean, we
well, that's good.
It was not,
that's good. You got good information and you getting your you taking your seat. That is good news.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, and I'm gonna take the seat too now because we went after the clerk's bond and his bond was like overturned. And so now we're going to decide, they've got to figure out how he's going to be charged, whether he's going to be charged with a felony in the next couple of days. And it's out there.
Things are getting interesting.
Everybody that's going through foreclosure, what I was wanting to say is, like, it's so important to do, as soon as they get the first letter in foreclosure, to do their response. In other words, challenge the debt right from the start.
Absolutely. Anytime you get a demand for payment from anybody, you should always send a demand for validation.
And you know what's so funny? It'll make y'all howl. It's like Chase sold this debt to another servicer. So I've got a new life on this thing. So I can do a new I can do a new response to them. And how we're having...
Well, a servicer and the owner of the debt are two different things.
Oh, they're like way out.
So.
You know, they're like way out. And we've got, with having my securitization audit, it's off the chain. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable what we found out. We found out that we've got glass key mistakes. You know, the thing wasn't entered into the pool in the proper time. There was just like,
That's good.
It's amazing what you find out. So,
right.
You know, he was trying to foreclose on me before I took his seat. And now I'm going to turn the tables on him. I'm going to clear the title in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to file a motion, an action to clear the title because North Carolina is a non-judicial state. So we have to, you have to file it into the, but one of the other things I've discovered, I met this attorney from New York, and he's doing some work for me. That this, when they try to do a short, they always try to do a short sale. And the short sale prevents the homeowner from buying their own home. And that's an antitrust violation. That's a major antitrust violation. And this guy that's doing my discovery for me from New York is an unbelievable attorney. His name's Carl Pierce. And he's an unbelievable attorney. If anybody needs to find him, he's got a bunch of webinars and stuff and a bunch of YouTube videos. And he's like so valuable of an asset. But he was telling me
we've got to wrap this up pretty quick here.
We have a lot of people
in the queue.
Yeah, but he's valuable to everybody. You know, I mean, he's gonna jump down their throat about the antitrust stuff because they can't tell who can buy the house. And what they're trying to do is, like, they're trying to tell everybody that they can't buy the house. You know, one of your friends, your family, your brother can't buy your house for you. And that's like, okay. Well, let us know
in the future how things go on that. Okay?
Yeah, we'll hit you. I'll hit you back. Said I've been spending so much money on all this other stuff. I hadn't had a chance to do the stuff like get on Wednesday's calls and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, I'm about to rescue my house out of foreclosure, and he's telling me I'm the most foreclosed person in the entire United States. I've been foreclosed on 8 times.
Well, I'm sure there's other people probably up in that same area as well. But thank you for the good news.
Thank
we got to keep
bye-bye.
Moving on. All right, bye-bye. Okay, we're going to go to 973. 973.
Yeah, that's me.
Okay, go ahead.
Good evening to everybody. This is Louise from New Jersey. I have a question, but I guess in order for me to explain it, is regarding to my Capital One lawsuit. I got through the court a day that I supposed to show up in court on August 4th. But just a week ago, no, 4 days ago, I got a letter from the lawyers of Capital One saying that, please let this letter serve as a plaintiff request to withdraw its application for an execution against that good and chattels in the above reference, which is my Capital One. This was electronically filed on May 7, 2014, but never was processed. The above reference judgment has been vacated. So that means the lawsuit that they did against me, they vacated that, they not pursuing that lawsuit? Is that what you mean, that letter?
Did somebody else fully understand what she said? I couldn't understand all of what you said there, unfortunately.
Me either.
Okay. It's a letter that I received from Capital One that they say that they are vacating the judgment against me. And they also say at the beginning of the letter that the execution, that application for the execution against the good inch of tools in my Capital One, they say they vacate the judgment. Now, what I don't understand is if they vacate the judgment and they already sent me the 2 days later, they sent me an interrogatory package. Is it mean that I told that they not going to pursue it with a lawsuit? But when I saw that package of interrogatories, I couldn't understand. Do I have to answer those interrogatories against them that I have to send it to Capital One?
Well, what I think I would probably do, if they said they vacated the judgment, I would go down to the court and find out if it actually has happened. Don't take the word of anybody on paper.
Uh-huh.
I would go and verify that myself. You know, because sometimes these people say things that aren't you know, it's not true.
So in my situation, just go before I answer any interrogatories. So I didn't know about this letter. A day before, no, in the morning, the same day that I got the letter, I sent a settlement agreement, no, what do you call? Oh, an offer to pay 37 cents of the total amount of the debt. I didn't have any counter offer yet, but I said, gee, I shouldn't send that letter because I already had their letter saying that they vacated the judgment. So now I'm in the situation that I got to answer that interrogatory also.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know what to think about. It was so confusing.
Well,
Dave, wouldn't you suggest is first you check the courthouse to see if they filed it, and then second, call the attorney and find out what the real story is?
Yeah, I would check the courthouse first. I mean, you know, anybody can say anything in a letter. But what counts is what's been done at the courthouse, been done with the case. So you need to go and find out what the status of that is. Have they, you know, vacated the judgment? If they vacated the judgment, okay, what are the interrogatories related to? Were they related to discovery of assets so that they could collect on the judgment? If that's the case, then there's no judgment for them to collect on, and I don't see that you'd need to answer.
If I don't need to answer, and they really they vacate in the judgment, do I have to put in anything in the court, any letter, any?
You have to find out what's happened.
Right.
That's the very first thing that you need to do. You need to go down to the court and find out what actually is going on with that case. What has been filed in? Have they vacated the judgment?
Okay.
I mean, you know, you can do a whole bunch of what-ifs, but go find out what happened and then deal with what happened.
Okay, so I will do that. How can I get into the phone call from Monday and Wednesday, the webinars and Wednesday?
The information on those will be put out at the end of this call. I always go over that and give the information as to the Monday call and the Wednesday call. So if you pick that up at the end here, we'll get it to you. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much. I will go tomorrow morning. I will go to the court and maybe I will be able to get it on Monday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
thank you so much.
The
entry's calling
is tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's right. Okay,
yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in finding out what the results of her research is also.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I will do that. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much. Okay, and you guys probably heard a telephone ringing in the background there. And that was the second robocall I got today from Chase. All of a sudden, Chase is calling me. Go figure. Let's go to 818. 818, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hey, how's it going? Finally, guys.
Pretty good.
Thanks a lot. I'm out here in California, got two properties, and dealing with Ocwen for probably about a year. They, I guess, bought the debt from, I never did anything with Ocwen. It was with IndyMac, and I sent them an intent to sue them under the Fair Debt Collection Act, the Rosenthal here for California, and the that other law that, you know, checks, you know, when they pull your credit on you. So I sent that. So
you're breaking up. We're not hearing your conversation.
Okay. Well, I'm up in the mountains right now, so I apologize about that. I was saying that I sent an intent
We heard that you sent the notices for FDCPA and FCRA. It was after that you broke up.
Right. That and also the Rosenthal for California.
Right.
Which is exactly the same, except here you're actually, even if you're a creditor, the actual creditor, you're able to, you know, sue them if you want. So anyway, what I want to ask is for some guidance, since I sent the letter, they received it yesterday, tracking that I looked into, and I was able to, I got it off of the website, the letter template. So I'm asking now for guidance. If they don't respond within 5 days, as it says in the letter that I got from your website, where do I go for the lawsuit? Do you have a template on there as well?
Okay. You are a member.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You're getting way ahead of yourself, and you're a little confused. You're thinking that you send a validation demand and they have to answer within 5 days. That is incorrect.
No. Not a validation, but an intent to sue.
Yeah, but that's your intent to sue letter. You've already got your causes of action figured out, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Now you stated in your letter to them that they have 5 days to contact you.
Well, it's the letter off of your website that
I'm asking you what your letter said. You should know what your letter said.
Right. It's an intent to sue under the violations, and that we can settle this. You know, I'm trying to be amicable, and we can settle this. You have 5 days to respond. If not, I'm going to go ahead and proceed forward with the lawsuit.
Okay.
For the violations.
All right. First of all, I'm going to suggest to everybody that 5 days is too short a period of time to give somebody to respond. I mean, if you send them a letter with 5 days, it's 5 days in your case. But I want to make this point here. I believe a court would very possibly take a dim view on you giving people such a short time. Generally, I would suggest you give them at least 8 to 10 days. I'm not saying, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, anything like that. Generally, I and many people I know that have been involved in this will go out and give people about 10 days, calendar days. So
the 5 days, that was already in the template for the – I didn't change anything on there. I just put the information –
Yeah.
Dave
okay.
is not finding fault with you.
No,
yeah,
and the other thing is, don't take that template to be exactly how you need to say and do things. That's an example.
Yeah, those are examples.
It's
They're not
a template.
Templates. Right.
Okay.
That gives
you an
example of how to write the letters.
Okay. Well, I'm just not, you know, it's my first time doing this. I'm not educated, so, you know,
we understand that. Believe me, we understand that very, very well. And what I'm going to suggest to you at this point in time, and I think everybody will concur with me, is just from, you know, talking with you a little bit, you aren't even remotely ready to file a lawsuit against somebody. You have a lot of studying to do before you want to get to that point. Even though you've threatened it at this point in time, you're going to want to delve into, first of all, the taking your money, taking their money section, and study that so you thoroughly understand everything that's in there. And then in conjunction with that, you're going to want to go back through the webinar series called the Summer Slam, because that's going to walk you through the process of properly putting together a lawsuit so that you state things properly, you compose the lawsuit properly, the various parts of it that are absolutely necessary, and then it goes all the way through the process of how to serve it. If you are going to pay the filing fee, then you can pay the $400. But if you need to go inform a pauperis, meaning that you don't have the funds to file, there's information there explaining how to go through all of that. So at this point in time, you need to go a good ways on your educational process before you're ready to move forward with a lawsuit. Because what happens if you try and move too fast and you're just using templates, you don't fully understand all the nuances of the documents that you're using, you're going to have a problem when it comes to a lawsuit and you're challenged on something, like a motion to dismiss or something like that. You're going to be getting ahead of yourself on that, and that can be very detrimental to you.
Right. Well, you know, that's basically what I'm asking is for guidance at this point, where, you know, my next step should be
taking their money section in the website. You want to zero in on that whole entire section, and then on how to be able to write a proper lawsuit. Excuse me. Go through the Summer Slam webinar series. And you go to the webinar archives to find that.
Okay. SummerSlam, taking their money.
Right.
And what happens if they, sorry about that. What happens if they do respond before I file?
What kind of response?
Well, it just depends on how they respond, what they say. That's going to determine what you do from there. You know, they may tell you you're full of crap. They may say, well, we'd like to talk to you about resolving this. You know, what is it that you want? In that case, you've got to understand what the damages are based on what you alleged or planning on alleging in a lawsuit, if you were going to go that far. And then know how to negotiate with them. See, that's all part of this process. It's not just send somebody a letter and then file a lawsuit and not know what you're doing and then expect somebody to throw money at you. There is more than that. So,
do you have any
do respond. They say, okay, you know, how do you want to settle this?
I read that
you shouldn't, you know, take any less than, you know, whatever the violation statutes.
You're not necessarily going to get the statutory damages. It depends. See, it depends. And here again, there's information in the website that you need to be studying on.
All right, but, you know, say, all right, what do you want out of this? How do you want to settle it?
Well, do you know what the specific damages are for the violations that they committed?
Yeah, I got 57 calls from them alone just last month, $1,000 per, you know, violation on the federal, and $1,000 on the state for the Rosenthal, and for, you know, looking into the credit without, you know, formal permission, that's $3,000 to $5,000, I believe.
What do you mean, $3,000 to $5,000?
On the what is it, the FCRA, or what's that?
Well, see, I'm getting the indication. See, right here, you're not even sure exactly what statute it is. And if you don't have a conversation with a lawyer, they're going to understand that you don't know all this stuff, and they're going to eat you up. Very honest.
Well, you have to understand, I'm outside right now because I got poor reception, so I'm not in front of the computer. I have to be outside in order to be on the phone. Otherwise, you know, I could recite it to you.
Is it right, like, an email address, caller?
Yeah.
All right, so one of the things I would strongly suggest to you is do not engage in conversation with the attorney. Handle everything via email.
Yeah, because
I absolutely agree.
With the amount of statutory damages that you just outlined to us, they're not going to just fork that over. They're going to give you a little bit of a fight, and especially if they smell blood, when they figure out that you're not really up on what you're doing.
You didn't even mention TCPA, did you?
What's that?
Did you mention
TCPA?
Yeah, yeah. Yes,
yeah,
we
hadn't heard
before.
You mention that. Yeah.
I mean, that could be $85,000 in damages, which you haven't brought up yet. So that worries me.
$85,000. Where are you getting $85,000 from? I'm at
1,500 times 7.
Oh, that's 1,500, and that's on the what? The FCPA?
No. Okay.
TCPA.
Do
you want me to tell you? Telephone Consumer Protection Act.
Okay. Well, that's a violation.
It is obvious that you don't know the statutes and the damages yet. So you have a lot of studying that you need to do to be effective in dealing with anybody that contacts you. I believe.
Can I ask you where they violated the one that you just mentioned right now? What was it?
That's
TCPA.
Right, that one. Where would they? I couldn't see the violation for that one. That's why I didn't include it. But where would the violation for that be involved in office?
There's information that we need. Did they call your cell phone?
Right.
I'm asking you a question. Did they call your cell phone?
Yes.
Okay. Did you give them permission to call your cell phone?
Only one time, and I had set up an appointment with a particular individual, and that time, which was about 3 weeks, I got about 3 phone calls from them every day from somebody else.
Okay, but you didn't answer my question. Did you give them permission to call your cell phone?
One particular person, yes. That's what I was trying to say. That were calling.
No. You specifically told somebody that they could call you on your cell phone?
A specific person, yes. But they were calling me every day, different people, 3 times a day at least.
But when you gave specific permission to one person at the company, you were giving permission to the company to call.
And a particular date and time. So I think if they were calling me different people, I think they're in violation. Wouldn't you think?
No.
The court won't agree with you.
No.
Really?
That's correct. You cannot give them permission. See, what we've run into here is you have a little bit of knowledge across the board on these various statutes, but you don't have a thorough knowledge of it, and that's what's getting you into a problem here. You have a lot of studying yet to do to make sure that you fully understand, not partially, just kind of an overview, but fully understand the statutes that you're dealing with. And very honestly, it's become apparent that you don't yet. And I don't want to see you get into trouble.
Well, yeah, you and I both. But if I gave a person, a particular person, a certain appointment to only call me at that time, and they call me repeatedly every day, wouldn't that be considered harassment?
If you gave them consent to call your cell phone.
What? No, not they. Not they. I gave one particular person and an appointment set.
No.
Did you do it in writing?
No, it was over the phone.
Then you're dead meat.
Yeah, it doesn't work the way you think it works.
I have a letter from the person as well stating that that's my relationship manager.
Well,
you're still dead meat.
Not necessarily, again, because unless he admits that he gave them permission or they can prove it, you did it in a phone call?
Right.
Did they take the phone call?
Did they take the phone call?
Yes.
What do you mean? What phone call?
Did you give them permission to call you in a phone call?
I gave
How
a
did you
particular
give them
person,
to call you?
Not they. Not they.
How did you give them permission? What communication?
I responded to the foreclosure letter. And,
how did you
respond? I called them. And I started getting the ball rolling on the, what do you call it?
Okay, you did it in a phone call. Okay, you did it in a phone call then. Did they record the phone call?
I'm not sure.
Did they say yes?
Well, actually, yeah. They always said, you know what, we're going to record this, blah, 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 blah.
He did meet.
Yeah.
Well,
what's that?
We don't know if they kept the phone call or the recording. We don't know if the court is going to look at a specific.
Well, I mean, as far
let's
as
put it this way,
it creates
a problem.
Potentially.
Yeah, potentially. So, what we can't keep going on this thing here. We've got a lot of people in the queue. We have to move on. But you need to do a lot more studying to better understand these statutes. That's one of the biggest things that I take away from the conversation we've had here. You understand some of it, but you don't understand it completely. And therefore, there's a lot of confusion, and that's why you're having a hard time figuring out what to do. You just need to study more. That's the best thing I can say at this point in time.
All right.
Okay.
Okay.
You know, we've got calls. You know, you study. If you've got specific questions, you know, there's Terry's call on Wednesday night. There's my call on Monday night. We can help answer some of those specific questions. But you need to study deeper into the statutes and know where the violations can occur. Okay?
All right, one more thing. On the last, the last call, which was a couple weeks ago, I told him, you know what, I don't want you guys calling me anymore. You guys are in violation. I didn't give you permission to call me every day, three times a day, different people I'm talking to. They haven't called me back. They haven't called me back since. Do you think that they might have, since they're not the original for the loan, they haven't called me since. Do you think that I should worry about them still foreclosing on me?
I don't know the circumstances of your situation. We don't have enough information to even begin to make a guess, and my crystal ball broke a few years ago, and I haven't been able to fix it.
Well, unfortunately. I mean, it's pretty simple.
We don't have enough information. There's no way we can even begin to make a judgment on that or a suggestion.
This, I'm giving you the information right now. It's Auckland. They're a loan servicer. They're not the original.
Yeah, but we don't know all the details. We don't know all the details of your particular situation. Just a couple of overview details is not enough to even begin to give us. My guess is if they're trying to foreclose on you, they're not probably not just going to turn and walk away and say, oh, you can keep your house. My guess would be they're probably going to pursue it. Now, exactly when and how, I don't know. But that's strictly a guess on my part, and that's all I could do at this point. But we've got to move on to our next caller.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much. Okay. We're going to go to 817 down here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Hello.
Hello.
You're on. Go ahead.
Hey. Okay. It's Keisha.
You got to speak up some, Keisha. You're real faint.
Oh, hold on. I think my volume's down. How's that?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay. I have two questions. The first question I have is I had an original creditor on my report, and they had sold the account. Well, they were actually reporting, but then they sold the account off to someone else. They wrote on the credit report that it was closed. Well, with the new creditor, it was taken while it was, still current and everything. So it's fine. But the new creditor, obviously, they hadn't reported. But I went into default with the new creditor. I then received a letter from the old original creditor saying that they bought the debt back from the creditor that they had sold it to, which I did, dispute the debt because now, obviously, they're a debt collector. Now, that's not my issue, but they started reporting on my credit again. And I did dispute it with the CRAs, plus I, did the dispute with the agency, also the creditor, again. And they reported, from that day, they reported, I believe, for 5 months, and now they stopped reporting altogether, which I know I have them for 5 months. But I'm trying to figure out because, Terry, I listened to your I've gone through that webinar, I don't know how many times myself also, but when I was listening to it today, I was kind of confused on if I can still get them with the SQB with the credit reporting every month because I know on one thing you said something about if it was the original creditor, which they bought it when it was in default, it would make them a debt collector now, but they would still have all of the information, I would assume, from start to, from, when I got the account and then they purchased it back from them because it didn't go to a lot of different hands.
Well, I'm confused as to exactly what your question is.
Me too.
Right, with the S2B, still can I get them with the S2B? From the continual reporting after I had disputed it with them because now it's back with them being the original creditor, but they are considered a debt collector because they took it back after the loan was in default.
From my point of view, the only way to be safe on that is to dispute it again because it's like they got a new account.
Yeah.
Well, they're not reporting anymore. They stopped.
Okay,
now.
But and you are confused. The
Okay.
The SQB is so simple. It's the only question is, A, did you dispute with the credit reporting agencies? Okay, and
yes,
if the answer to that is yes, then B, did they continue to report?
Yes, they did for 5 months.
Erroneous,
that's what I'm saying.
Information without doing a reasonable investigation. Nothing else can come into the S2B.
Okay, because that's what I'm saying. With them being the original creditor, I know you said that when I listened to the one today, the part three, it was saying with them, if it's kind of like a reasonable investigation and you gave the example about, it being an original creditor and then it came back. It wasn't exactly like that, but then it brought up what I was actually dealing with. And I said, wait a minute, since they are the original creditor, with a reasonable investigation, obviously, it only went from them to basically this particular party and then back
Keisha,
to them.
Keisha, you're getting this way too confused and you're making it way too difficult. Please listen to Terry explain for you.
Okay, it only has to do with did they investigate, and what did they do to investigate? then the question of whether or not that's reasonable is up to the court and the jury.
Okay, that's what I was trying to get to, because I'm like, how would I know what reasonable would been then, because it's gone from
Well, did you not hear me when
back.
I said, and I stressed that, the courts have held that the issue of what constitutes a reasonable investigation is a fact matter of law and must be left to the jury to decide, unless the defendant can prove irrefutably that what they did in investigation was in fact absolutely thorough and reasonable. And I've not seen that done.
Yeah. Okay. Now let me explain something here that I'm aware of. I'm familiar with what Keisha's talking about, and what's going to be interesting here on what you were talking about, Terry, is the fact that, and I want to clarify this, make sure everybody that's on this call understands this. She had an original creditor. They sold it, went into default, and then it was sold back to that original creditor. Now, you stop and think about things. If there's going to be an investigation done, well, who's going to be doing the investigation? It's back to the original creditor in this particular case that originated the loan.
Right,
and
that was my question.
They can probably do an investigation and have the information they need simply because
of that. You run that risk because it is possible, not necessarily likely, that they kept good records. That's why these banks, sell them off in the first place, because they don't have good records. But it is possible that they could meet that test under the what constitutes a reasonable investigation, because they are, in fact, the originator.
Yes, and that was my question. That's the point that I was trying to get to.
You may not want to go down that road because of that.
Yes, that's why I was like, let me ask first, because I'm like, they went back to them, even though now they're a debt collector. I'm not worried about them anymore because they stopped.
You got to ask yourself, why would they buy it back?
Yeah.
Well, I guess they figured they could buy it back to have me pay. I don't know, but that's
If they didn't have substantiating paperwork with which to go forward with collection on, why would they buy back something they already sold?
Well, that's just it. That's all open to speculation. Now, this isn't something like a major bank here. This was a little bit different type of account, was it not, Keisha?
Yes.
Okay. So, see, this is not a normal circumstance that you're going to have out there, where something is sold and then you're dealing with somebody else, like Midland buying something and them not getting records, so on and so forth. This particular case, just so people don't get confused, is different. And Keisha, because it's going back to somebody that can very possibly provide the information, you don't know for sure, but you have to recognize the possibility they can, maybe you don't want to go down that road.
And also, there's another issue. You don't know what the purchase agreement or forward flow agreement between the purchaser and them was when they sold it, because in some of those contracts, it's outlined that if any of the accounts are disputed by the consumers and the collector is unable to successfully collect or verify or whatever, that the original seller will buy it back. So it doesn't necessarily mean that they have it, that they have all that, but it's a good possibility.
Well, keep in mind, Terry, again, and Keisha, that yours is it's not like a major bank situation like the credit cards and Midland Buy and stuff, things like that. Yours is a much smaller situation. What type of company was it where the debt originated?
It was like one of the little banks for that does the like water softener systems, like, you know, like that,
okay.
That they put into the house. So it's different. Like
that's
I said, it was
financing.
With,
yeah.
Yes, it was with them, and then they sold it. But then now it's back with them, and I got a letter saying, hey, they purchased it back. But obviously, they haven't, since I disputed it, they did 5 months of reporting after I disputed it. But now they haven't done anything. You know, I guess they figured, well, let's get off of a report, realize they was continuing to report or whatever. And then now they haven't reported since then, and they haven't even started, you know, they stopped even trying to collect it from me. But I was like, that thing, when I listened to that today, it actually brought up that question because I was like, wait a minute. That seems like it's going to be a little, you know, tough situation. I probably don't want to muddy the waters there, but let me ask.
Yeah, well, that's you're going to have to make a call on that because, you know, and weigh the both sides there as to whether you felt that they could do a proper investigation and come up with the information and legitimately say that, yeah, we did a proper investigation and we got the information. So, I mean, and when you stop and think about it, now, wait a minute, you go even further than that. Who would be doing the investigation? They'd be doing it of themselves, would they not?
Right, and that's what I was asking. How could I, you know, who would determine it's proper because they're actually going to be doing it?
Well, they could come right up there and say, yeah, we got it right here.
Mm-hmm.
Because we originated it. Even
right.
though they're in debt collector status, it's a matter of what they're reporting. So, yeah, you want to, I think, you want to think twice before you go down that road.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's just best to leave things alone.
Yes, that's
so,
why I wanted to
okay.
clarify.
All right,
we
spent a bunch of time here. Hopefully, did we answer your question for you?
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And then the other thing I had was, Terry, can you help me with this law firm sent me information regarding a school loan that I had. However, they just sent the transcript that I guess they got from the school saying this was the balance. But there is no contract or anything that goes along with it that I have signed. And it looks like the information they received from the school, like with the information from registers or whatever, it gives like the whole account coming from, well, it's not at zero, but like, you know, like the $50 for the application. But there's no application. There's nothing else there. So I'm wondering, you know, if I should actually, because obviously they can't prove that.
I don't know what the context is of what you're saying, Keisha. You know, is this from a dispute, a FDCPA validation demand or what?
It's actually both. They pull my credit and, you know, FDCPA.
Okay,
so,
all right. So what is your question then?
So I wanted to know because it doesn't go back to the zero balance of, you know, obviously the validation part to show that they have the information, but they sent the transcript, I guess, that the school forwarded to them. Now, could that be taken as, like, validation with that school
record?
Well,
does that prove
that
there was a debt, or does it prove that there's some transcripts there?
Well, I mean,
if I paid for my tuition, there'd be transcripts if I was going to school. Does that mean that there was a debt if I paid cash for it? There'd still be transcripts. Does that mean that I owed some money somehow, some way?
Right. That's what I was trying to make sure because I was like, to me, that doesn't seem like it validates anything but that I took a class and this was the amount of the class, but there's no contract. There's nothing else that sits there that says, okay, this is how much it is for this class. And
well,
I thought, you know.
Well,
okay. All right, I'm good. You answered that for me, so I'm fine.
Okay. All righty.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's go to 404. Yeah, we got to keep moving in here and try and be as concise as we can so we can get as many people in as possible tonight here. 404, you're unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how are y'all this evening?
Pretty good. How are you?
Fine, fine. Thank you for taking my call. I'll just be brief, and I'll ask my question, then let y'all mute me back out, and I'll listen to the answer.
Okay.
I had a situation where I went into the bank, opened an account. I was approved at the time I opened the account, but they go back and they pull my credit later. And then they.
What type of account?
Checking account. Business checking account. No credit involved. I didn't apply for a loan or anything like that. And then later on they go pull my credit again, or some different department goes and pulls my credit again. From what Terry was defining as permissible purposes, would that fall under permissible purpose?
Did you sign a contract with them?
I just signed the account opening agreement.
Did it give them permission to pull your credit?
I didn't read it, which I know was my fault.
Okay. Come back when you read it. That'll give you your answer.
Okay. Yeah,
chances are it did.
Okay.
Right, but you don't
they
know.
They pulled it twice,
know.
Pulled it once, and then again later?
Yeah, they pulled it. I gave them permission. I knew they were pulling it right then and there to see if I was approved for my account. They approved me, opened my account, took my money, and then later on some other department pulled my report again and said, no, we don't want his account, because they found out my credit wasn't all that hot and they couldn't sell my file, so they couldn't make money on me, so they decided to close my account.
What do you mean,
okay,
sell your account? That doesn't – a checking account, they're not going to sell your checking account.
No. A lot of banks pull your credit information because they sell your information to other agencies.
No. No. I think you're a little mistaken there. Larry, what's your thoughts on what you know here?
Who did they pull it from both times?
First time, I guess it was check systems. Second time was early warning systems.
Okay.
But the first time it was pulled at the local branch level that I was dealing with, the gentleman I was sitting in front of, and then the second time was some kind of quote-unquote security or account verifications department in some other city.
Ooh. And, Larry,
how far
Carrie?
Apart did those occur? Just a second, Jeff, excuse me. How far apart did those two polls occur?
Within probably 3 to 5 days of each other.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Go ahead, Jeff. Larry.
You remember those two cases where the supposed creditor pulled credit reports and they got the plug-ins on the terrorist list?
No.
I'm not familiar with that. I'm new to this part of – I've been with some other agencies and some other calls, but I've not – this is my first call to this organization.
Well, one lady, went to buy a car, and they pulled her credit report, and then TransUnion had a plug-in that they market to their customers that compares your name to a terrorist list. And if you have a name similar to it, they report you as being on the terrorist list. And then I think it was Missouri's AG filed suit against Experian for doing the same thing.
And TransUnion's now been sued for it. That's the Cortez case.
Right.
All right, so for his situation, he's looking for an answer. You guys thoughts
on
that?
He needs to go and pull the credit report from the second firm.
Because that may explain why all of a sudden now they don't want his account.
Right.
Okay. So.
And if they did, then you may have a cause of action against that reporting credit reporter.
Okay. Is the check the agency's banks use, like check systems, early warning systems, they fall under the same credit laws as my understanding. Is that correct?
The same laws as TransUnion, and Experian, and Equifax.
Right. The
right.
Fair Credit Reporting Act.
Okay.
Yeah,
get
I see checks.
Get your copies of those reports.
Warning.
And if there's... Go ahead, Larry. Sorry.
Well, I was just saying, I've sued check systems, and I'm about to sue early warning, so, for FCRA violation.
Right. But what you want to do is get those reports and look at them, and if there's incorrect information, the first thing you do is dispute it.
Okay.
All right?
All righty. Thank you for your time.
All right.
You're,
you're welcome. Thank you. Okay. Let's go to, well, it's 11111, all sorts of ones here.
Sounds like a Skype call.
It must be a Skype caller. You've been unmuted.
Hello?
Hello, is there, yes.
You got me?
We've got
Hello?
You. Go ahead. You bet.
All right. I have a TCPA. I filed suit. Settled with the lawyer over the phone. He is wanting me, they were trying to get me to file dismissal before they made the payment. Now, I got that fixed to where they're overnighting me a check, but they want me to take and do the dismissal. Your recommendation, a regular dismissal, voluntary dismissal, what way should I go? Stipulations or...
Basically, what I have done, and I've been through this numerous times, is I just file a notice, a motion to dismiss, and I just state in there, having reached a settlement with the defendant, plaintiff requests the court dismiss the above-styled case with prejudice. And you want to make sure that you put that in there because they're going to want that in there, and it should be. If they're settling with you and you've got all matters done, you put in there that you want that. And then your wherefore statement, wherefore plaintiff requests the court enter an order dismissing this action with prejudice, and with
okay,
all costs to be paid by the individual parties.
Okay, because the attorney said that he didn't matter if it was with or without prejudice. He wasn't even stipulating it in the agreement with it being with or without prejudice.
Yeah.
And
well,
I didn't know if that was – so do
well,
put
you,
with
– okay, let
no.
me let me ask you this. Let me ask you this.
Right.
You don't have any other issues with this company or anybody associated with them that you're aware of, right?
Right.
Okay, well then...
Is it possible you ever will again?
I'm sure, because right after I filed suit, the attorney called me, and then 2 days later, I got more phone calls.
Okay, well, if it doesn't say in the agreement whether with or without prejudice, then do it without prejudice.
Exactly.
Now,
okay.
It's going to be different, in there, you know, because all I do is file a notice. I don't know if, Dave, your particular court requires a motion. But you might want to ask the
clerk. Yeah, check with your court clerk as to what they require, whether you require a motion or a notice to dismiss.
Okay, because that was my big thing is voluntary dismissal, motion, or and I wanted to make sure that I didn't hang myself.
Well, no, and that's good. And if they're not asking for a dismissal with prejudice, then don't give it to them.
Okay.
And that leaves the door open for anything else that that might come along there. So, you know, be careful of that. But my suggestion is just contact the clerk and ask them for the proper procedure. Do I need to do a motion to dismiss or just a notice of dismissal? And then, you know, you can use the basic language that I put in there. It really
okay.
is very simple. It's literally just several sentences. That's it. You don't need to write up something.
And that was my concern because as I was typing mine up, it was like, is this enough? You know, it's like,
No, because you stop and think of what you're doing. All you're doing is telling the court, I'm done. I got what I wanted. Just go ahead and put this in the file cabinet. We're done.
Okay.
That's
okay.
All you're doing.
Well,
it doesn't
take
anything
fancy. On the
other side,
since I missed the good news, I settled 5 calls for $5,000.
Whoa! Very good.
So,
good
yeah,
job.
I'm very pleased, and I can't thank y'all enough, and I the studying that I had to do and hearing the rest of the phone calls, if people do their studying and follow what you guys have said and follow it like eating a pizza, you got to cut the pizza and eat one piece at a time, everything else will fall into place.
Yep. Well, you did great on that. I mean, that's fantastic. $1,000 call. Wonderful. Good job.
All right. I
Alrighty,
appreciate
that
it. And that'll do me for tonight.
All righty. Thanks, Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to 909. You have been unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
I'll try to make this, my name is Joel. I'm in California. I'll try to
Hi,
make
Joel.
This short. There's a few questions, actually, I do want to try to get in. First of all, going kind of extending to one of the previous callers earlier today, in regards to not jumping the gun and sending a notice too quickly in regards to pulling your credit report, the more on the promotional ones. Now, for example, I Discover checked my credit 3 times. I did send a notice to Discover in regards to those 3 pulls. Now, I followed kind of the same simple kind of example that was on the website. I am a member, and kind of jumped the gun on it and mentioned to give me a call back or email me within the 5-day period. I heard on one of the calls also on a webinar, on an archived webinar, that, you know, probably shouldn't go after the promotional ones. That was after I actually sent over the letter. Just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that in regards to maybe disregarding those promotional ones as opposed to just, you know, concentrating more on the ones that are associated with debt collections.
Yeah, my personal view, and I'm speaking strictly for me as an individual here, I don't think for most people out there that they want to go after the promotional pulls. I don't. I wouldn't even consider it because there's much more involved in it because you're going to end up going in and delving into whether they made a bona fide offer of credit and how they did that, where, so on and so forth. I don't know if there's that many people that are really going to be that competent and want to venture into that and educate themselves to make that fly. And that's a choice everybody has to make, but my personal opinion, I'll let the others weigh in on it, is I leave the promotionals alone. Terry, what's your thoughts?
Well, that is starting to change, but it hasn't been established well enough just yet. I would leave them alone.
Okay. Jeff?
Okay.
Well, I'd leave it alone.
Okay. Larry, your thoughts?
I'd look at each case, you know, each individual case. Like, I got what appears to be a couple of promotional pulls, and one I did get a firm offer of credit, the other one I didn't. So I may write a letter and say, why'd you pull my credit, and see what they say. And if they don't give me a suitable answer, then, you know, I'm going to go after them for $1,000.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you got to be you're really, really careful, and you really got to know what you're doing.
Yeah, and the difference between the rest of us and Larry is Larry has been litigating for a long time. He is extremely well-educated in the FCRA.
I would agree with that, and I would say it's not that it can't be done or that it absolutely shouldn't be done, but it shouldn't be done by a beginner or the faint-hearted.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and I've never done it before. I've never even threatened before, so this will be a first, and we'll see what happens. But it's not a big deal, you know.
Yeah, no. I was just going to say, I think my reasoning was more, you know, as you, it's mentioned on the website, you know, going after the low hanging fruit, But I think it's more, it was more, maybe I just misunderstood. I think it was more targeted more towards those, the debt collections.
Right.
Pulling your credit.
Exactly.
Yeah, debt collectors pull your credit, no question about it. I'm going after them, and they're going to pay me.
Yeah.
Okay. I do have another one. The primary reason why I wanted to call in or question was I'm kind of assistant. I became a member primarily for a situation that kind of my wife's going through where her student loan has been transferred and sold about 3 or 4 times. Before I became a member, I was kind of doing disputes with the credit bureaus on my own with my own personal credit, had some success, and then started to assist my wife with helping her getting her credit situated. Now, they came back saying that they verified each of those. They all, and all these debt collectors are reporting to her credit over the same particular account. And they've all come back verified. One of them has a zero balance. Another one shows transferred and sold. One of them has an even higher balance than the original ones. So after becoming a member, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I didn't take the proper steps, but I sent out letters for her to validate each of those, each of the accounts, to each of the ones that are reporting to the credit bureaus. Is that something, or was that the proper step to take in that situation to have each of those verify those particular accounts?
That's a good question for Terry.
Yeah, except I missed it. I walked out of the room for a second.
See how you are. Just very briefly go over it again. Please.
Okay. Student loan was in default, was transferred and sold about 3 or 4 times. Each of those 3 or 4 different collection agencies that are now trying to collect on the debt or were previously trying to collect on the debt are reporting on a credit report. So prior to sending the validation, a dispute was made to the credit bureaus, which was then resulted in, after the investigation, that they verified it, that they belonged to my wife. So now I've sent out validation letters to assist my wife to each of those collection agencies. Was that the proper step in doing so in this case for them to validate each of those?
Each one is a separate entity. Okay. Each one, are they buyers or just regular debt collection agencies that may have been assigned the debt for a short time?
Is that correct?
Okay, so then
that's what Terry's asking.
Which are they? No.
They're not the original. No, the original was... It was the original. I'm sorry.
I said these various entities that are reporting on the credit report that same debt, are they debt buyers or are they just credit reporting agencies that may have been assigned the debt for a short time by the original lender?
How would I be able to tell the difference?
Did you Google each and every one of them and find out who they are and what they mainly do?
Well, from my understanding is that they do attempt to collect
defaulted debt. That's not – they all attempt to collect the debt. But the reason I'm asking you is how did so many of them end up with it? Has it been – you don't know if it's been sold over and over again – which means they're never going to be able to prove a chain of title. I mean, it's not even possible. Or was the original lender trying out different collectors in an attempt to get it collected? And you're not going to know that if you don't research each one of those entities pulling or showing up on the credit report.
And finding out specifically what they do. You can't just
right.
make a generalization, oh, yeah, well, they collect debts. Well, you need to read the information and find out exactly what kind of services they provide or what business they're involved in.
Like, for instance, if Midland is on there, it wasn't assigned to them. They bought it. If Portfolio is on there, they bought it. Asset Acceptance, they bought it. You know, the big debt buyers. NCO could go either way. LVNV, they bought it. You know, you need to know.
Right. Yeah, because one of them, for example, is American Student Assistance.
Well, that was probably an assigned creditor. But still, they do need to be able to validate it. If you dispute with the credit reporting agencies, they do have to do an investigation, and they better be ready to prove that it was a reasonable one.
Okay.
But you need to know more about each of those entities before you formulate your strategy going forward.
Got you. Yeah, I just Googled one right now. It just mentions that, they deal in the administration and repayment of student loans. So I don't know if maybe I got to look a little farther into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to study more. Like, I just Googled what you said, American Student Assistance, and it says right here, provides neutral information about student loan debt. That doesn't sound like it's debt collection.
Mm-mm.
So, okay. I mean, and that's just right on, that's on Google. That's not even going to their website. So,
sure.
So you need to do some more research and find out exactly who you're dealing with.
You don't want to go after somebody who is not a collector and did not even possibly get your whole credit report, but nothing more than a promotional gets. Be careful with that. Make sure you know who it is you're dealing with before you take any action against them.
Okay. Now, is there information on the member site to be able to differentiate between the two, whether or not they are an actual debt collector?
Read everything on their website and find out what they say. Google them, see what information you come up with. If they're a debt collector, when you Google them, there's going to be complaints on the Internet, forums and blogs and talk sites that talk about them, not just their own website. You know, you're going to look at what others have said about them.
Yeah, you can go up on the Google, for instance, and type in the name of the organization and then follow that up with complaint.
And you can check your state's Secretary of State website and look them up in the businesses to see if they're licensed as a debt collector in your state.
Yeah.
Okay.
American Student Assistance, I'm at their website. American Student Assistance is a nonprofit you can rely on for neutral, honest student loan solutions. So
if they're a nonprofit,
right there, they're not a debt collector.
No.
Okay. All right.
It's pretty easy. You just got to spend some time doing that stuff.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Appreciate it.
All righty. Thank you very much. Okay. I'm going to try and squeeze one more in here, but you're going to have to be fast. We're going to go to 404. You have been unmuted because we're coming right up on the top of the hour. Go ahead, please. 404. Well, if nobody's going to pop up, then we're going to go on to the next one real quick. We'll try and sneak one in. 973, you've been unmuted.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Bank of America, NA, and Backholms, what's the difference between both of them?
John?
Between Bank of America NA and BAC, one is the bank and one's a debt collector.
Okay, the reason I'm asking is if my assignment was assigned to Bank of America NA, as a service to service my mortgage, And I understand Bank of America NA is not in the business of servicing a mortgage. Rather, is the Bank of America Homes. So I'm wondering, why would they assign it to Bank of America NA?
Well, a lot of the banks recently, because they were getting into problems with servicing, like Chase had Chase Home Finance, then they merged Chase Home Finance into J.P. Morgan Chase Bank N.A. It's the same thing you find across the board, and what they're doing is they tell you they're doing something, but it's just in preparation potentially for foreclosure. If you're in that type of a position, you know, if you're delinquent on payments, they'll send you some notices telling you they're switching things around. Or even when you're not in delinquency status, they're sending notices switching things around because of other litigation that they've been running into themselves. You know, a bank can be a servicer. They can have a department that does servicing. Why they're doing it in your particular instance, it's hard for us to say. You know, we'd need more information.
Okay. My next question then is, can a trustee be a debt collector?
Well, and when you're saying a trustee, you're talking about in a loan pool trust, securitized trust?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, with a trust, they have the trustee that does what the beneficiary tells them to do. So they're just exercising a role as they're being directed. The trustee, you know, has no ownership interest in the debt. What was your question with the trustee again?
Why I'm asking is, they sent me a letter claiming that this is an attempt to collect a debt, the debt collector and all these things from the attorney. So I'm wondering if my account made it into the pooling and servicing, you know, within the cutoff date and the end date in time, they couldn't be a debt collector then.
How do you know that it's in a trust?
Well, that's what they claim, because they're trying to foreclose on me under the trust.
Okay, when you're saying they're trying to foreclose
Bank of New York.
On you? Bank of New York?
Mellon, yeah.
Yeah, but tell me the name of the plaintiff.
That's the plaintiff, Bank of New York, Mellon.
It doesn't say anything about it.
For a such and such of securitization?
For the CWAB 2007-4.
Yeah.
Trust.
Yeah, they're acting as trustee.
Yeah.
Right.
And
they can go ahead and do that until you have to push back and you have to dig, and it's up to you. And the only way you can really dig is, and it's kind of a long answer, but are you a member?
Yeah, I did the audit already, and according to the report, they said there's nothing that proved that this account belongs to the trust. Made it into the pool.
Okay.
It never made it into the trust properly? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, so
go ahead,
if they're saying that it's in a trust and you're getting a letter from someone saying that they're a debt collector, then the appropriate thing that you might choose to do is file a federal lawsuit under the FDCPA and do discovery on them, because that's the way you get to the bottom of things, doing discovery. You can't do it as a counterclaim in state court, because state courts will just chuck it out, or, you know, they'll say, oh, you're in foreclosure, and they don't give you a fair hearing. But if you properly put together an FDCPA claim filed in federal court, then you're going to get to the discovery phase, and during discovery, you're able to dig a little deeper to find out what the truth of the matter is. The reason people do the audits is to find out what they can. You don't disclose to the other side that you did an audit, but you can lead them down the path to give you answers and find out at which point they lie.
Okay.
and that's where your violation can arise. And then you can turn around and use that when you're fighting your foreclosure in state court to show that they lack standing to do the foreclosure.
All right. FTCPA.
Yeah, and I'd advise you to study. You need to go to the Saving Your Home section and read through that, and also the Taking Their Money section. And Jesse has covered in the Foreclosure Bash,
okay,
which is one of the webinar series, exactly what you need to do. And you need to study that in his process, but you need to get going sooner. One of the main things you can do now is for each one of the companies that have sent you a letter saying they're a debt collector, send them a debt validation letter.
I did.
See if they can. And did they validate?
They sent me some documents of a copy of my note with just one endorsement claiming the note holder and all these things. But the note that they sent me has just one endorsement from an original lender. I don't see any other endorsement in it.
And let me ask you this. When you look in your public records, which you probably can pull up by computer and see where the deed to your, the mortgage to your property is recorded, is that the same one that they sent you, or is it different?
It's not the same, because the one I see that they sent me has only one endorsement, but the one I see on I don't even see any my record at the city, because all I saw there was the MERS recording. Is it M-A-E-R, MERS?
It's MERS. Okay, well, if it's MERS, you've got a really good shot at turning around and not only suing them, but giving them a hard time with the foreclosure. But you need to get into the website and study.
All right.
Yep.
Okay?
All right.
And, you know, there's Dave's call, too, on Monday night, and Terry's on Wednesday night. But you need to do a lot of studying and get going. You're on the right track. You're doing things to start with. You're doing a good job. Keep going.
All right, sir. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, everybody, that's going to wrap it up for tonight. Of course, we have the calls on Monday and Wednesday nights. We also have a webinar tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. I'm actually going to be doing that webinar tomorrow. It's going to be the next episode of Conducting Yourself in Court, and we're going to be touching on direct examination. And I hope everybody will be able to join us for that tomorrow afternoon. And again, that's at 3 o'clock Eastern. Tomorrow night is Terry's call. That's at 8 o'clock Eastern. If you are not on Terry's email list, you need to send her an email immediately at queensongbird@gmail.com and say, please put me on the list, and she will get you on there. Don't wait. Don't fiddle around. Do it right now, because she's going to be sending that reminder out shortly for the call tomorrow. And if you're not on her list, you don't get it. So take care of that. Then, of course, on Monday nights, there's Dallas Death Discussion, the call I've done for over 5 years. We're in our sixth year now. We're always there on Monday night. Never missed one in over 5 years. That is on TalkShoe.com. The PIN number is 54318, and it starts at 9 o'clock Eastern. That call starts 1 hour later than the Tuesday and Wednesday night calls. But please, everybody, spread the word to people that are out there that don't know we exist, that this help is out here. We're here to help you. We donate our time. And the only thing we ask you to do in return for that is to pay it forward when you learn things, help other people, teach other people, and spread the word so other people can find us and get the help they need. And for those members that are on the call, use the forum in the website. Please use the forum. There's a search function in both the website proper and in the forum. You can get questions answered there on a short-term basis. You don't have to wait until, you know, through the Wednesday to Monday area to try and get answers to things. So Thanks to everybody that joined us tonight. Thanks, Terry, Larry, John, Jeff. Appreciate you guys being here. Jesse will be back next time around unless there's some major change. But everybody have a great evening, and we will talk to you hopefully on the webinar tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.